Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
Harrison. Drisagana Gay pops it back to Jack Harrison. Missed by Beto. Here's McNeil! Everton will feel they fully deserve that. They've made hard work of it. But hard work has found a way. Dwight McNeil gives Everton the advantage with an emphatic strike. Decore just has to hold on to it, and that's what he's done. It's three away wins in a row for Sean Dyche's defiant Everton, showing just the right spirit for the fight that they face this season. And in the battle that seems to be Everton against the world, Everton are winning. It's Nottingham Forest 0, Everton 1.
Very pleased. Mentality was excellent, I thought, and has been for a long time. I think it continues to build the winning edge of a side. I think that's three away wins on the trot, which is not easy in the Premier League, we know that. But a lot of good things today. And coming here, you know, they've made this a really tough place to come to. And so very pleased for the players and obviously out of our hands. But it's a restart again. You know, it's another step in the right direction, but there's plenty more steps to go.
Hello, Blues. This is the Toffee Web Podcast, coming to you early in what promises to be a busy December and the middle of what is a busy week that will see Everton play three matches in 8 days. One of those games is, of course, already in the books, a fine away win in Nottingham Forest that extends the Blues' recent run to four away wins in five, lifts them off the bottom of the table and to within 2 points of that dreaded dotted line separating 17th place from the relegation zone. Here to discuss Saturday's victory at the City Ground and look ahead to two difficult home games is the full squad of myself, Lyndon Lloyd, Anna McCulloch, Andy Howard, Al Bretland, and Paul Trail will hopefully be joining us very soon. And seeing as you were there and waxing lyrical about what a boss away day it was, Al, it seems a thing that we start with you. A really important win in the context of where we were after Burnley's win earlier in the day, but a pleasingly spirited and gritty performance, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was it feels like a very big moment. I think after the disappointment of the Man U game, where we thought we'd come out of the traps flying after the points deduction, I just felt like the players really showed what they were about. And as you say, it was a spirited battle and display. You know, I don't think there was loads of quality on display, but it was just good to see like Dwight McNeil having a really good game, James Garner being excellent in the middle, Tarkowski and Branthwaite again, just, you know, solidifying that partnership. It's something that you don't really have to worry about. Mikalenko was great. Just a great game all round, and it was really pleasing as well that, you know, in the absence of Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Everton were still able to function, you know, because for the 18 months before this season, we simply haven't been able to. So it's good that, you know, that shows that the squad has been improved as well, you know, and Everton are making steps forward. And I think, you know, although the home form's been really disappointing with the away, with the, you know, the results away, you know, I think, you know, Everton are a top 12 Premier League side, I think. I don't think that we are relegation fodder anymore. I think, you know, the previous two seasons, I think we've just got into a bit of a mess, into a rut. We've had, you know, a very unbalanced side. But now the 14, 15, 16 players that we're calling on at the moment, there's enough there. You know, this is a team, a decent side. You know, it's not going to pull up any trees, but it's going to get points, I think. And that's what was really pleasing. You know, against the Nottingham Forest side, they were down there as well. To go there, and you know, as you mentioned, I was there. Really good atmosphere, really good club, great stadium. And you know, they similar to Everton. You know, they've got a proud history there of the Brian Clough years, which they show on the big screen. They really, you know, ramp it up, and it was like a goosebumps moment. So to see that, see how they responded in their second season, and then for Everton to just go and take the 3 points was just excellent. So yeah, I think, you know, Saturday was a lot about Everton showing their character, and I think they did that really well.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think it was necessarily our best performance of the season, but it was one of the performances where I felt the least concern, and a good part of that was down to how we played. I also think that Nottingham Forest were pretty atrocious and pretty insipid. I think the big difference in this reverse fixture last season was that they had Brennan Johnson, a player of real quality in the final third. And you saw in the game on Saturday evening that really they were kind of missing that little bit of an X factor. And luckily for us, although we too had some pretty wasteful moments and certainly didn't always look comfortable and clinical, the one chance that we really had to take, we took. And it was the best moment of the game. It was a really sublime finish from Dwight McNeil. The paintbrush, as it's known now, apparently.
Apparently so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much that's going to catch on. I mean, Dwight McNeil's been a bit more of a sort of a roller so far this season, but he's covered a lot of ground.
Without very, any very good. Courage.
Thank you. Me and my team have been working on that one all afternoon. But yeah. I think it was really pleasing to see him take that chance, particularly with the chance he had just before half time as well. I think I'll do his confidence a world of good. So yeah, a really pleasing result. Massive 3 points in the context of things. And as Elle says, we are, without that 10-point deduction, we are comfortably in that mid-table position. And I feel this performance, winning games like this, felt very Moisey, and it felt like a kind of Bolton or Wigan away, didn't it? It felt like something that we ground out. We didn't necessarily have to be at our best, but you knew that there was enough in the tank to get us over the line. And that's really pleasing. These are the kind of games against sides like Forest that we need to win. So hopefully it just brings that belief into the group ahead of two really big games at Goodison coming up.
Well, looking at the table, we are literally a top 12 team if you give us our points back. So, you know, we are punching above where we deserve to be, points-wise, if you give them back. And I think this proved it, really. We are a better side than Forest. But for me, that's why it was such a nervous watch. I think it was the most nervous I've been watching Everton since, certainly since the end of last season, when it was pretty obvious we had to get points. Just because when you've got a game like that, and we've said this before, and actually you go, but your mind goes back to Forest last year. When you've got a game in the Premier League, when you're in the bottom third of the division and you're on top and you're clearly the better team, you've got to win those games. Because if you look at the games we've got coming up, you know, it might be more difficult to get points. And it was my nervousness, and I got to be honest, my kind of mad ramblings on the Toffee Web podcast group kind of summed that up, because I couldn't believe what I was seeing wasn't going to end in a win. That was my frustration. It wasn't as if we were poor and I was thinking, oh no, we're rubbish. It was like, we've got to win this game because we're the better team in it. And it was just the end bit, wasn't it? It was just the end bit. We created loads of, I would call them situations rather than chances. You know, so many times we, once again, I've said this so many times this season, we could have made the pass to make the pass to make the goal. It was that just a bit before the assist that we just couldn't get right again. And you could just see it kind of dwindling into a nil-nil, really. And it would have been so unjust, and it would have felt like a bit more like a defeat. But I'm really pleased we managed to do it in the end. And it feels big. It feels big, those 3 points. Not only for the table, because, of course, we're still within that win of Luton if we never get these points back. But also just, I think it it was our... if we've been kind of down on the canvas, this was our first punch back, wasn't it? This was us kind of really being back on the front foot, going, come on, we can do this. And I just felt like the United experience, it was almost too much. So much had happened in that week or so. And it was at Goodison, and it was under the lights, and it was against a team that you're never really sure what's going to turn up. And then that thing happens 2 minutes in, and it just kind of completely deflates it. But I feel like this week we properly showed that we're fighting back, and it was great. And I envy you so much, Al, being in that away end, because it looked fantastic. And I watched all, it was one of those games on the telly when you watch all of the post-match stuff just so they show you shots of the fans, and you were still there kind of 20 minutes later. the perfect day to start fighting back.
Yeah, away wins are so much fun because, A, you know, you're obviously going in there as the underdog in most situations. Most teams do, you know, you're never sort of guaranteed the 3 points, and you're obviously in their house, and you can give it loads. And yeah, it's just, it's always fun to win away from home. And I liked, on the spirit of what you were saying, Andy, about Everton sort of fighting back, I like that last line that we played on the intro of the BBC commentary, where it says, if it feels like it's Everton against the world, you know, Everton are, which... you know, we are at the moment, and long may that continue. I think everything that all three of you said is completely right, that coming off the back of that United game and performance, which really did feel like a bit of a gut punch, and that, you know, it could have gone the other way. It could have, you know, the players could have got to a point where they thought, you know what, we've been through two relegation struggles that have really been of the club's making. And of course, you can argue, you know, the legalities of, yes, this the points deduction is also the club's making, and that's a discussion for another day. But this really wasn't the players' fault, you know, the fact that they're in this situation again. And so to see them come out and have the determination, the unity and the drive that they did against Forest was so great to see. And that, again, you know, it's credit to Sean Dyche. I think he's just, this focus on just keeping things simple and focusing on the basics and just sort of creating that mentality that he always talks about. I mean, you know, fair play to him. I think we'll always, with every manager, you're going to have your misgivings about certain decisions. Certainly, you know, Mr. Young that we keep talking about, you know, I think that on another day he might have been tested more. You know, he got his gave away his customary early free kick. But apart from that, I think, you know, he managed Anthony Elanga quite well. I was surprised at the fact that Forrest didn't use either of the wingers more. You know, Morgan Gibbs-White and Elanga were both sort of the two players that you'd worry most about. But they didn't really cause us all that, there was that many problems until the end. It was a nervy conclusion. I agree, Andy. I think, as I put in the group, I wasn't quite as nervous as you were, just because sometimes you just have a feeling about whether the other team's actually going to get it done, whether they're actually going to find the way through. And I just felt, just by watching the pattern of the game, that Forest just weren't on it. And, you know, so obviously there are no guarantees. And when the final whistle blows, it's just like, yes, come on, because it really was, you know, in the context of everything that's happened and where we were in the table coming into the game, a massive 3 points. Because as I put in my match report, going into Newcastle and Chelsea at home, given our, the quality of those two teams, given our home record, I mean, to be sitting, you know, at the bottom of the table with only 4 points after 14 games, it really does feel dire. You know, if you think back to how things were the last couple of seasons, I mean, that kind of points return after 14 games would have been like, holy hell, you know, this is only going to go one way. So, Yeah, absolutely made up that they got the win. And I think when we did our preseason predictions, I had us finishing 12th. So right now, points back, please, Premier League overlords. And that prediction seemed quite as nutty as it did at the time.
I think what's really encouraging as well is that, you know, although the home form and the away form does contrast so much, Everton's away record, we only need two more points to have the best record in the entire league. Now, if you'd have said that to us over the last 2 years, to be better on the road than City, Arsenal, you know, United, that is a huge thing that Dyche has done. To have that game plan, to have that togetherness. And what I really loved is when the board went up for 6 minutes extra time, the defiance that Everton showed to keep hold of those 3 points. James Tarkowski was heading everything. And there was a moment in the game as well. It sort of summed up to me what we've been through in the last few years and what the likes of Jordan Pickford, Calvert-Lewin, the players who've been there a few years, it showed what they've been through, because there was a loose ball and Jordan Pickford sort of slid out, tackled the player, and he sort of celebrated like it was a goal. And I feel like that was a big moment for him because of everything he's been through. You know, battling relegation, the 10 points, because he must be thinking himself for his own career. You know, myself and Everton are doing well again this season and we've been battered down again. And it was just great to see the players really, really battling like that and you know, doing it for Everton and doing it for themselves. I think McNeil as well, you know, when he scored the goal, it was great to see the Everton players go to the Forest fans and celebrate. They've got that like swagger and that confidence. And, you know, as we've mentioned, that us against the world mentality. You know, they've scored and they've given it to the home fans. And I love that, because I think character can really, you know, push you a long way in the Premier League. So that's really good as well, that, you know, the record on the road is just forever improving. And, you know, that confidence is massive.
Absolutely. Welcome to Paul Trail, who's just dropped in. Paul, we've been waxing lyrical about the spirit and determination that carried us over the line in that match at Forest. How did you see it?
Yeah, obviously I've heard that you guys have just said, but there's probably not an awful lot I can add to all the superlatives that, I could only agree with the last sort of 30 seconds of what Al said then. So, I thought he did really well. I found this a little bit miffed with some of the media I heard sort of like the next day. You'd have thought it was like a real sort of knife-edge game, which we just about fluked, like from some of the report on Gov. Unless that was just me being paranoid. I thought that was a bit strange. But no, I thought we did really well. It was a really good away performance. Doing brilliant on the road, aren't we? We've just obviously got to turn a bit of that home form around. But can't fault the players at all. I thought they were excellent. Few standout players there. I think that one that sort of seems to sneak under the radar a little bit for me was Idrissa Gueye. Had a really, really good game, and I think that Garner got all the plaudits. He had a very good match too, but I thought it was right out at Idrissa Gueye, and I thought he had a pretty good game against Man United too. So he'd, with an on and out, he stepped up pretty well these last few games. But good all round, wasn't it? Really, really good, really enjoyable performance.
I'm glad you mentioned the media reaction there, Paul, because I think it was the Daily Mirror who gave James Garner, who was everyone's man of the match, a paltry 5 out of 10, which that's pretty much the reaction, isn't it? It's So I agree. I think it wasn't like we spectacularly outplayed Forest, but and obviously you see stats and you see they had more possession, we had a few more chances as well, but I don't think anyone would come away from that game and say we didn't deserve to win it. The few chances that they really created were very late on, and as you say, I think the likes of Gueye, Garner controlled the middle of the park, and yeah, right to particularly highlight Garner, because we know his limitations going forward, but he does play a really, really big part in the goal, doesn't he, with the weight of that pass into Harrison. So it's good to see him getting involved higher up the pitch, particularly when we haven't got Onana, who we know does that sort of thing pretty well. It's nice to have Gueye coming in now and looking a bit more like his old self and a bit more confident. And I'm just really glad that Beto didn't 50p that header over the bar for a goal kick, because that really looked like what was going to happen until it fell at McNeil's feet.
Yeah. He probably should have. He just mistimed his header really better. It was a good height, right? So claim an assist for the dummy. I don't know, but yeah. just as well.
It looked to me like it was a bit high for him, and I'm glad that he didn't, because he could have actually got it and sent it past McNeil, which obviously would have been, which unfortunately would have capped off Beto's day, because he obviously missed that gilt edge chance. And I think there's a feeling that, you know, he's just so desperate to get this first Premier League goal that he's probably trying a bit too hard. But I mean, when it does go in, the reaction that he's going to have is going to be something else. He's probably going to be ripping his shirt off and jumping into the crowd or something. But I mean, I feel for him. I think, he's obviously not had the run of games that he would need to kind of settle into the Premier League and really sort of find his feet. I think it's a bit too early to kind of assess his limitations at this point and what sort of impact he might have over the course of a season. Certainly he's a handful. And I think that is that's your number one requirement. If you don't have Calvert-Lewin, you need someone up front to occupy those defenders and keep them busy. I'd like to think that there's someone at Finch Farm is going to help him to win some of those aerial battles, because for a lad of his size, he doesn't actually win many of the balls that we're putting forward. Some of the hold-up play, you know, his first touch can be a bit iffy. So I think I'm hoping that with time he can find his feet and some of those things will come. I don't want to judge him too soon, he scores that goal and obviously things are very, very different. Not a bad presence to have up there when you don't have Calvert-Lewin.
I think you're right about the football he's played. I mean, he probably would have expected at this point to have played an awful lot more. Arriving for the fee he did with Calvert-Lewin's injury record, you're probably thinking that he's played himself into the side by now. I just think he's coming cold and... Yeah, it's all the bits are all over the place, aren't they, really? I mean, you can tell everything's kind of there, but he's the dictionary definition of somebody trying to score a goal and trying far too hard. Yeah. The one in the second half that cleared the stand was just wild, and there was so many better options around him. I think you're right. I think he can perform a role, but I think he just desperately needs any goal to go in the Premier League, and he'll be a different player.
Just to put his presence into context, though, as well, he's played 382 minutes in total, and of those games, Everton have won 7 of them. When he's appeared, so it just goes to show that, you know, having that focal point, it's not even a case of him necessarily winning the aerial duels or holding the ball up. It's just giving the defenders something that's to think about. And I think the fact that he can hold it up, and I think, you know, his size and his pace, I think he's probably very difficult to defend against, because you're not sure whether he's going to come short for it or whether he's going to run the channel. So, you know, 382 minutes, seven of the games he's appeared in, Everton have won. And I think that's the difference from this season and last. Especially having Chimiti on the bench as well, which we were able to bring on. You know, I've seen a few people say that Chimiti wasn't great and was a bit of a headless chicken against Forest, but he gave the defenders something to think about, and that's what Everton have been so lacking. So I think, again, you know, the two really important signings, I think, you know, the centre-forward area and that centre-back pairing have transformed Everton into a relegation-threatened side, into a team that can go 1-0 up and then hold on to it as well. I think it's only going to get better, really, for Beto. And, you know, that will get better for Everton.
Beto. I think the thing is, he's similar enough to Dom, even if he's not as polished at the hold-up play. At finishing, he's similar enough that when he comes into the side, we don't look like a totally different outfit. Whereas, obviously, last season with Mopay, it was night and day. And the great thing now is Mopay's an option when we're not playing, and when he's scoring against Luton, it's great. So it's a win-win all round, isn't it? But I think he's clearly not had enough time in the team, and hopefully, say we progress in a League Cup. Obviously, we know we're facing the third round of the FA Cup now as well. So hopefully he'll get some minutes there and start, and particularly over this busy winter period as well. We don't know how long Dom's going to be out. So you'd think with more minutes and maybe with a bit of a cooler head and someone saying, you know, it's not all about the goals. He will take one of these chances, because I don't think it's a case of an Umar Nias where quite early on we write Beto off. There's enough that we've seen there, certainly in that header against Doncaster that I'm still waxing lyrical mm-hmm. about. There's enough of a player there that we've got something to work with. And as you say, El, the fact that Chimiti's there is a similar sort of auxiliary option, although I think I've moved around my flat more in the last sort of 5 minutes than Chimiti did when he came on. But still, he does look dangerous off the bench. He seems to offer something usually. So we're certainly stronger in that area of the park than we were last season, where you're really scratching your head at times thinking, oh, so Damari, well, look at Forest last season. Damari Gray played as a false nine up front. It's a totally different situation, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd forgotten that, actually.
I think like the main thing is we don't have to worry so much about Dominic not being available anymore is the thing. Well, obviously, it's been the biggest, such a big headache when he hasn't been available the last two seasons, really. He's 6'4" or so. He's fast. He's really strong and he works hard. I mean, if you've got a striker who's got all them attributes, it's going to be a handful at the end of the day, and just to be able to have him in there to bring in. And Chimiti is impressing me. Yeah, maybe not so much the other day, but certainly the little sort of cameos and little bits of games he's had. He's picking up quicker than I thought he would, Chimiti. So yeah, I think he's coming along really nicely too. So yeah, much safer hands up there, aren't we? Than we have been for some time now, really. So yeah, that's definitely a relief. And yeah, he's doing okay, but I've just got to give him time and get him, you know, give him the opportunity to get up to speed. It might take a while. It might take a season. You know what I mean? You just got to but it's good that it's just an option there. That isn't the Omope, essentially. That is, you know, I don't just mean in height, but head and shoulders, but above what we had on the pitch, you know, last season or even earlier this season.
Yeah, and it seems based on Neil Mope's comments after the Brentford's game that Beto's got a better mentality on his shoulders as well. So, and also worth noting that in the context of him sort of occupying defenders and giving them problems, he won the free kick that we scored the goal from. So,
yeah,
plenty of time for Beto to come good. Interesting that I think I certainly expected a bit more from Jack Harrison so far. I think that he's certainly earning his corn in terms of work rate. Up and down that right side, obviously he's providing that cover for Ashley Young. And yet, despite really not showing himself to be the player that I thought he was at Leeds, he's weighed in with a couple of assists with nice deliveries with what I think is his weaker foot from the right. So it's nice that, you know, some of these players haven't really hit their stride yet, and yet we're putting the results together away from home.
Yeah, I think Harrison really is. He just seems to sum up what an Everton player is at the moment. He's got some qualities, but he's also got some big flaws. You know, as I mentioned on the last podcast about the pinball machine, you know, sometimes his crosses will be exquisite, and other times they'll just fly over the bar. But what I think he lacks in sort of accuracy sometimes and consistency, I do like the fact that he is just a hard-working player. Mm-hmm. And I think at times, you know, that can be enough to get you a result, even if, you know, the quality isn't always on show. And I've actually got one of my best friends is a Leeds fan, and he did say that, you know, there'll be a game where he pulls something out of the bag, which is just spectacular, and then he will go cold for five games. But then he'll put in a really good, you know, next three games. He's very up and down, but what he will do is he will deliver moments. And so I think again, it's a good thing that he's there. The only disappointment for me is that I would like to have seen Danjuma more involved throughout the season, because I think as well, like, I may be reading Danjuma completely wrong, but in terms of, I think he's one of those players who maybe has an attitude in terms of he thinks he's really good, so he wants to be playing, and I think when he's not playing, that's when you can see a dip in his form. As I say, I might be completely wrong about his character there, but in terms of keeping a player happy, I would like to see Deitch make earlier substitutions so that when Beto is called upon, when Chimiti is called upon, when Danjuma is called upon, they aren't coming in from the cold so much, so that they have got minutes in the legs. And so that's where I think, especially with McNeil, we know in terms of his fluidity across the front and how he can play on the right, I think Danjuma still has a big important role to play, but I do think he probably needs an arm around the shoulder from Deitch now to say, you know, we do need you, you know, and you will feature. And hopefully, you know, that is Deitch's intention, because, you know, we've seen that Patterson's been out of the side, but Deitch in his press conference has said that he, you know, he really rates him. So I hope that that's the case for Danjuma as well, because I think, you know, we don't have the biggest squad, and I think a player of Danjuma's undoubted quality, you know, he hasn't really shown it in his few cameos in the last month or so. I think that's still important. So it's important that we don't rely too heavily on Harrison and McNeil, because we've seen in previous seasons, you know, injuries do happen, and, you know, you need players to be ready when they're called upon.
Your lead supporting mate could have basically been describing basically every winger we've signed over the last 10 years when he described Jack Harrison as someone who has one good game and five not. It could have been Kevin Morales, couldn't it? Could have been Damari Gray. I think that's probably the level of player we can attract at this point in time. You know, gone are the days of the likes of Pienaar out on the flank who were on the whole sublime. So I think Harrison has shown enough, and as you mentioned, Lyndon, he's waiting with some important, well, a really important goal, a great goal, and some nice assists as well. I think he shows in the goal at Forest that ability to take the ball on either side, where he brings it down on the left hand side, and then it's a ball in with his right foot. That's something we've not really had for a while since, I don't know, maybe Gordon to some extent. More on him later, I'm sure. But I think there's enough there, but I agree. I'd like to see more from some of these players who are on the bench. I do feel that over this winter period, we've started to see now that Anar and Calvert-Lewin are out the side. And it's worth saying as well, to get a result at Forest any time under these circumstances, good to do it without arguably our two sort of best technical players, is, you know, makes it even more impressive. But you do feel that other injuries, other suspensions might start to build up, and it would be nice to see more of Danjuma, even if I've been unimpressed largely by him so far in an Everton shirt. He's clearly played at a much higher level and has got other gears to work through. And likewise, yeah, as we've already said, certainly Beto, the fullback position is another one on the right hand side, at least, where you would expect as well over this winter period to see some rotation, because Ashley Young wasn't really targeted too much against Forest, but you feel like in these upcoming games against very pacey opponents, if I was Eddie Howe or Pochettino, and I wouldn't be doing this podcast if I was, then I would certainly be looking at that right-hand side and thinking that's where the ball's going time and time and time again. Because the few times Forest did get in there, it looks our position of weakness. And I feel I'm not singling Ashley Young out too much for his performance on Saturday. He didn't make too many mistakes, although I think we did say about the set piece moment where he took the ball off the likes of Garrett McNeil was a bit frustrating when he hit straight into the wall. But beyond that, he didn't really do too much wrong. But that's hardly, the bar isn't set too high with Ashley Young performances, is it? And I do feel that in these next couple of games, certainly against City in December as well, he's going to be coming up against some really quick, sharp opponents. So again, it's another area where I'd like to see a bit of rotation. Flip side of that is we're seeing settled performances in other areas of the side, and we mentioned it in the kind of closing stages with Tarkowski and Branthwaite, certainly Mikalenko, those three together look really, really gelled and strong at the moment. And also game time for the likes of McNeil now, who seems to have a better relationship with Mikalenko and the players in the middle as well. So there's something to be said for a settled side, but I'm with you. I would like to see some more of these fringe players and see what they can do as well.
I think it's just the fact that we're bound to see changes in the next 2 weeks because we've got so many games. I mean, the same team really cannot play Thursday. What have we got coming up? Thursday, Sunday, well, midweek, weekend again. I mean, you know, you can't do it. So we will see changes. And it'll be interesting, actually. It'll be interesting in which games the decisions he can make, which games he decides to change it for, and what exactly he decides to change. I mean, going back to Harrison, I found myself kind of watching him probably too closely, and it was probably a bit harsh in the end in my own head. But with the ball on Saturday night, Harrison did absolutely nothing with the ball, really. I know there was the ball in for the goal, but I was so disappointed with when he just got the ball, not even in an attacking position, just kind of, you know, middle third. Nothing really came of it. And I was really frustrated by that. This was obviously at a time where we weren't in front. And so I was, again, thinking, come on, we've got to win this game. How are we going to do it? And I was thinking, can Dan Juma not do a better job out there? But then you think, is Dan Juma going to be the change when he wants to rest Okoro and play Dan Juma more in the middle? He seems to like the two wide of that being hardworking and shape and all the rest of it. But then I don't know who comes in for him then. But yeah, I think it's just a fact of the matter that we are definitely going to see changes in that Everton team in the next 2-3 weeks. And it's how the squad copes with that, isn't it, really, that will be the story of the festive period.
Yeah, it's Thursday, Sunday, Saturday, Tuesday over the next, okay, what is it, two weeks. So
that's, yeah, it's not too bad, is it? It's not kind of, you know, it's not every midweek.
Right. And we've seen Ashley Young play, you know, the cup tie and then the weekend game. I think completed almost 90 minutes in both matches. So, you know, I think Deitch is not afraid to, as we've seen, stick with the settled side. And I think particularly in that defence, we're really, really seeing the benefits. I mean, James Tarkowski had a bit of a sort of an iffy start to the season, but he's really, really establishing himself again now. It's just an unbelievable signing on a free transfer. And then, you know, we've said everything we need to say about Branthwaite. I mean, he's just so calm, so collected, just a real talent. And, you know, Mikulenko, many of us wrote him off, I think, in his early part of his Everton career. And he's just settled in and is just doing a job on a week in, week out basis. So, yeah, I think there's just plenty of – it's a settled side now, and it's got – and it knows what it's about and knows what it needs to do. I think, as we all know, we now need to try and resolve this this home form, which we obviously spoke about last week, particularly against teams who are much better than us on paper. You know, it's going to make these next two games against Newcastle really, really tricky. If we perform the way that we have, particularly against Manchester United, and I'm talking obviously not in terms of chance creation, but, you know, obviously that final third execution. The Barcos have their injury problems, but obviously it's not stopped them from getting some decent results over the last week or two. The one that stands out to me where they're concerned in the context of Thursday, though, is their 2-0 loss to Bournemouth a month back. I suspect the atmosphere will be there again at Goodison under the lights. So we do have a good opportunity to start making Goodison a fortress again, don't we, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, back-to-back home games, right? Is it Newcastle and Chelsea? But, you know, and yeah. So I think we'll win one of them at least. I think we'll, you know, we'll hopefully turn a bit of a corner at home, because we've been, I just think, Lord of Averages. I mean, if we just create, in most of the games, just number of chances we've had, surely there's got to be a game sooner or later when we just some of them go in, or even we don't create as much but win. Yeah, I mean, because I think, yeah, you know, we've been a bit unlucky in a lot of the games, certainly in terms of chances created anyway. So, and is that feeling like, I feel like we owe Newcastle one a little bit as well. I mean, they came and beat us, you know, battered us really, didn't they, last season at Goodison Park, and that they beat us away last season as well, and I think away the season before that, we had the late Iwobi goal the season before. I think the COVID season they beat us twice. You know what I mean? It feels like it used to be a team we'd beat all the time, certainly at home, and now it's a team we hardly ever beat. So I feel like we've got to sort of turn that around a little bit, and against it under the lights, but it feels like we'll always play Newcastle under the lights now. It's always it's always a midweek game, isn't it? Home all the way, so that's nothing new. I don't know if we this one or the Sunday one, but I feel we'll win one of them two games. By that, I don't necessarily mean we'll lose the other one. We might draw the other one, but I think there's a win somewhere in the next two games, and I'm quite confident in that. But yeah, it's certainly an opportunity to address that home form, definitely. Yeah, let's see. But just quickly on saying about Dyche can't change that. He's going to have to change the team at some point. I think very much challenge accepted as far as Sean Dyche will say it. I think he likes to stick with that team, doesn't he, as much as he can. But the Corby's on four yellows. I can't see him getting through them next two games without picking up a yellow card against Newcastle or Chelsea. So he'll have to change it at some point. There's a lot of there's a few players on four there, I think, aren't there, in terms of booking. So plan for week two, I think, and there's just a game maybe on three. So yeah, there's definitely going to be changes in there. But do you see him changing it for Thursday? I can't really see him making any changes to that team really at the moment.
Dom might come in. I think that he suggested afterwards that Dom might play Thursday, but that Onana's got a little bit longer to go. So, yeah. And I'm surprised we haven't seen Seamus Coleman yet off the bench. Because, again, to the point about players coming into the side cold, you know, I'd like to see him, you know, if only to kind of to settle my own nerves about Ashley Young.
I think the difference with the likes of Coleman being eased back in is that he's a player that Dyche already knows and already has that level of trust with, whereas some of the others that we've spoken about, clearly that's not necessarily built up yet. And I think that's a reason why, obviously, makes sense why we've seen so much of Dom and why Beto has been used sparingly up until now, apart from the games where Dom's not been available. But I think with Seamus, it does seem the obvious one, but he would at least start to come in for the last sort of 10, 15 minute of games. But yeah, Dom back in that side is good news. But as I say, I don't think it necessarily changes how we approach the game against Newcastle, because Beto is a like for like, if not a perfect impressionist for what Dom can do.
Yeah, I think when the points deduction came in, and even before then, I felt like this week would be sort of season defining, just because it's the two home games on the bounce. It's, you know, at Goodison we need to change it round. And I think really if we can get positive results, you know, between 3 and 6 points, I think that is where Everton take a step forward away from the rubbish we've experienced over the last 2 years. I think it's that important. And I think if we were to lose the games in the same way that we have, I think Dyche really needs to take a look at changing things in how he approaches it or the tactics or something. But for me at home, I think that the real issue is Abdoulaye Doucouré's position, because I feel like in the final third, because he is quite a sloppy player and he does lose possession quite easily, I think that needs addressing somehow. And for me personally, I'd love to see Dwight McNeil play behind the striker, just because I think he keeps the ball better. I think he can work better with the centre forward. And, you know, that could mean that Patterson's right back and, dare I say, Ashley Young plays in midfield maybe. Or, you know, and then you're bringing Doucouré into games then when he's full of energy. I think that there's something wrong with the home setup. I just think that, you know, a lot of people have said we've made chances, but I think now we've had enough bad results to see that there is something there that needs tweaking. And for me, it is when we're getting the ball into that final third, the amount of times that we give possession away is massive. So for me, I'd maybe take Doucouré out. And as I say, I want to see McNeil on the ball more. I really do. And I think with Harrison and Danjuma, I think you can afford to do that. And it could be quite fluid, that front three, and give the opposition to think about. But at the moment, I think it works to an extent, but I think Doucouré is just so much better away from home, because I think, quite simply, that the pressure isn't as great, and, you know, your counter-attack can be a bit more stunted, whereas at home, you're in the ascendancy and you need Everton to, you know, be having a go. And I just feel that it breaks down far too much. So, you know, and that's where I point to, you know, I want to see Danjuma involved a bit more so that when we need him, we can. But I think this week is really going to define where we're at and whether or not Dyche needs to switch something up, really.
Interesting looking at Newcastle's away form. They've won one Premier League game away from home all season, and that was 8-0 at Sheffield United.
Really? Wow.
They've won two away games in all competitions all season, and the other one was at Old Trafford when they've beaten 3-0 in the League Cup. And they've got every weekend and every midweek past Boxing Day, because, of course, they've got Champions League football as well, and they're still in the League Cup. So, you know, you could argue it is a game that we can probably look at a bit deeper than just looking at the table and saying, well, they're quite good and we're all right. You know, they haven't been very good away from home at all. At home, they've been incredible. But yeah, we've still got this stat going around that which still stands, that if we score first in a game under Sean Dyche, we still haven't lost. 10 wins and 4 draws. So what have we got to do to score first at Goodison? I mean, we did do it against Brighton and drew. But what have we got to do to score first at Goodison? I mean, is it as simple as, not simple, but is it the side, or is it just how they play?
The way I look at it, I think Al's right to an extent in that, like, some of the performances, it is maddening how badly we are in possession, I find, particularly in the opposition half. Just the amount of chances. I did see some stat the other day, 18 big chances created and 1 scored at home or something ridiculous like that. Is it a psychology issue? Is it like the burden of expectation at home? Is it the pressure of being at home that players are fluffing the lines in front of the goal? Is that, you know, is there something in that? Because they're putting these away from home, aren't they? You know what I mean? So, or is it just a bit of bad luck and a little bit of, you know, is it just going to be one of these games when a few of them go in? You know what I mean? You saw, it feels a while ago now, when we beat Bournemouth 3-0, see how much they relaxed once they got 2 up, and they were just like really, really confident and composed, weren't they? So, a few games ago, I was probably thinking, nah, it's just bad luck, it's going to change. But now I'm thinking more and more, are they just bottling it? You know what I mean? Is it a psychology thing? And because, yeah, I don't think performance have been great at home, but I think a goal can change that to make it become a good performance. Does that make sense? So, but I don't know. Say we missed a few early ones against Bournemouth. You know what I mean? Wouldn't have been probably leave and go, oh, wow, that was terrific. That was amazing. You know what I mean? It's goals change the way things are, the way the game pans out, the way the team performs. So, yeah, it's just about putting it in. So, I think it's just become a little bit too much of a burden for them now. And I don't know, maybe just, you know, win this one, win again on Sunday. And, you know, it can just change very quickly, can't it? But just got to start putting it in. I know it sounds very, very simple, but that's what it comes down to.
My worry is that's exactly what Sean Dyche is saying. and that's how simple it is. I guess the one other thing to take into account is, on the one hand, Newcastle coming off the back of a really good win, and they're performing pretty well in the Champions League as well. Probably should have beaten PSG. But then the flip side of that is they've got a lot of players out injured. So if we could play them at any point, and as we've said, they've got a hell of a busy festive period as well. But you look at their first 11, it doesn't really strike fear into me. I look and I see Almiron and Gordon potentially up at the top. Isak, yeah, they're good players, but I feel we look solid at the back. And then I look at their back line and think we've got enough players to hurt them. And I'd say a similar thing about Chelsea, although the one thing is both of those sides have players in who can hurt you on the day. But feels a little bit like Forest at the weekend, where maybe not as much fear as there would be under normal circumstances.
Yeah, for me, I kind of treat I don't think they're bottling it. I think it all comes down to just a lack of execution in the final third. I think it's all wrapped up the approach play. You know, some of these opportunities that we get in transition, particularly with Doucouré. You know, it's just the final ball's not there. Then the finish isn't there. I mean, and we've seen on a couple of occasions, players, you know, we've had a player either side, and then the player will just go for it themselves. We saw that with Calvert-Lewin against United. He had one really good chance where he cut inside and then just powder puff shot straight into the goalkeeper's arms. I think we need something to kind of break there, up front. So we just need to be much, much more clinical. So I don't think it's a case of bottling. At least that's not the way that I see it.
You're listening to the Toffee Web Podcast.
We haven't spoken much about Chelsea, have we? Chelsea are, I don't really know what to make of Chelsea, because they, you know, they potentially on paper have an even better side than Newcastle, but they're not as good a team. Clearly they're not in the same place psychologically. They don't seem to be coached as well yet. Obviously Pochettino's got to get his feet under the table there. They just within the last couple of weeks seem to be finding their feet a bit. But yeah, they've got fast players in Sterling. If he plays, they've got Nicholas Jackson up front, who's scoring goals. They're going to be a handful, but at the same time, they seem susceptible at the back, and I'm hoping that that's something that we can take advantage of in both of these games. Neither one of these next two teams are unbeatable from a defensive standpoint.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at Chelsea's league form, I think the last time they kept a clean sheet in the league was October against Fulham. I think that's right. Conceded 4 against City, 4 against Newcastle. They won at the weekend, but they conceded 2 to Brighton. They don't really keep clean sheets. So that game to me, again, if we think of those big Goodison games under the likes of Duncan Ferguson and under Lampard as well against Chelsea, it felt like we had to dig in more, whereas this Chelsea side feels a lot less predictable, a lot less solid. But then they do have really dangerous players, lots of speedy players up front, certainly. So I wouldn't say I'm 100% confident about either game against Newcastle or Chelsea, but I'm also with Paul in that I feel like at least one of them, something has to break. And I think if we can show anything near the level of performances we have away at home in one of those games, I can see us getting something, because they're both sides to me as well that probably prefer to play a little bit on the counter. Pochettino sides have always done that, and Newcastle kind of do as well. So the fact that we also sort of play that way to some extent, or at least look probably most dangerous when we do, even if we don't always make the most of those opportunities, I think there's something that will give in those games. So I'd say I feel like we're more likely to beat Chelsea than Newcastle if I had to pick one, but I'd take either, and preferably I'd take both.
Absolutely.
Well, Chelsea have got Man United away as well Wednesday night, so two tough games away, isn't it, for Chelsea? So yeah, maybe right, they'll have a day's rest on us because we play Thursday. But yeah, could be a fixed opportunity to get something. Yeah, we've really got to start turning this around at home, haven't we? Yeah, I mean, we can't just keep on having this. Like, oh, we were unlucky there. We need to put a bit of a line in the sand somewhere. And, yeah, certainly, back to back home games, whoever you're against, really, it's an opportunity, isn't it? And you know, we're not talking, normally we're playing Chelsea at home, we're normally probably talking about the second or third best team in the country. We're talking about the 11th best team in the country at the moment, you know, so 12th, 11th, whatever it is. So, and again, Newcastle, not quite at the best. So, it's certainly opportunities there to take something from these games.
Nothing scares you, does it, really?
No.
About Chelsea especially. It's not, I mean... I don't look at either game really this week and think, oh, wow, we've got a tough week. You know, they're both sides that I think if the ingredients are right at Goodison, which they should be, we've got a really good chance. I mean, I don't know. Goodison, it's a strange, like we were talking about earlier, it's a strange place at the moment. It's more likely to go either way. Either we'll get no points or we'll get 6. Because it just has that about it at the moment. It's just that it's Goodison seems confusing at the moment to me. As a fan, I don't think it was like as a player.
Yeah, I think as well when we play the bigger sides, I think Dyche has been quite conservative in how he set up. And I think really to get Goodison going, you need to be on the front foot a bit more. So as I said before, it may be just a tweak in how we're approaching these games to really go for the jugular, you know, especially against Chelsea, the time that they've had, you know. I think that's how we can really take advantage of it.
And to be fair, we never really got the chance to get going against United because they scored that ridiculous goal, you know, after 3 minutes, you know, that changes the whole complexion, particularly if you're talking about how good we are scoring the first goal, if you don't even get the chance to score the first goal.
But even with that, and I know it was very, very early in the game, but even with that, from the kickoff, we pretty much retreated.
Yeah.
United, I don't think we touched the ball, did we, before United scored? I mean, we may have, but I can't really remember us having the ball before United scored. And it was just that kind of, that tone was kind of set, I think. Even as of watching it on the telly, and even after seconds of the game, you just thought, oh, okay. They've got the ball and we're not, it's not a kind of one of those vociferous kind of raucous kind of on pitch performances at Goodison. Already it wasn't. And I think, like we were saying, away from home, yeah, you can kind of go for 5-10 minutes. All right, what have you got? But at Goodison, I just think there either needs to be a tackle or there needs to be a corner or there needs to be a something. And I think then it starts, you know, the kind of juggernaut starts to roll a bit, where I think, you know, even if we haven't conceded a goal recently early at Goodison, we haven't done that thing that just gets the place going, which you just don't need to do away from home. It's one of those strange things in football, isn't it? That the same game, you know, the goals are at the same ends and there's 11 on each team, but it could be such a different sport when you're playing at your own ground.
It's true. Okay, let's move on to our weekly question. Which, in the spirit of Dwight McNeil's sweet strike to win it at the City Ground, this week's question is simply, who is your favourite ever left-footed Everton player?
Got a long list here.
Royston Trenter.
Billy Letdenoff. I'm just going to get out there now. Just put these names out into the ether. We're going to come down to the same few here, aren't we? But I might guess go slightly different because I think I know what might be coming. But the first real proper solely left-footed player that I really enjoyed watching, and I enjoyed watching it for a very specific reason, was Andy Hinchcliffe. Because I was that age where I was kind of really getting into who was who and who played where, and obviously then we went and won the cup. And his crosses, I never forget, just his crosses into the box for Duncan just seemed to happen kind of quite a lot. And that was at a time I remember Everton, like, oh, I don't know what I was, like between 10 and 13 would I have been then? 12 and 14, something like that. And Everton, you know, footy is just magic, isn't it? It's just magic. And having a left foot that is literally just for standing on, I could never understand anybody being able to use it like that. And the way he whipped it in, I just love watching Andy Hinchcliffe. And I can't really remember much about his game. It wasn't as if I wasn't really at the age where I studied performances as such. But I just remembered that sweet left foot. And you can only have a wand of a left foot. You can't have a wand of a right. he definitely had a wand.
It's very true. I am left footed. Very cultured left footed. Again, you can only have a cultured left foot.
That's true too.
Initially, my thought was, towards, firstly, I misread the question. That was the first thing. So I was going to jump in and say, Dinyar Biletdinov against Wolves. That's the best left foot ever goal. I was going to come steamrolling in.
I really wish you had it on.
Full of confidence. But one against Portsmouth was good as well. But he's probably not my favourite left foot Everton player. I'll probably say in terms of players that I've seen live regularly, because obviously there's some great ones down the years, I think it probably has to be Leighton Baines. I think he was so cultured, to use that word, in the way he looks, the way he moves, the way he took the ball. And I think particularly ahead of the Newcastle game, it takes us back to that game at St James's Park with probably the best free kick you could probably ever score. And certainly something I would dream of doing as an Everton player with my own left foot. He always, always, always looked good. Always at least 7 out of 10. just a nice guy, and it's great that he's still with the club. So Leighton Baines, but it's a pretty easy one, I'd say, in terms of modern ones. But see if anyone's got anything different. Paul?
No, I'd have to go with Leighton Baines. I mean, I could be all funky and go, you know, I think Kevin Colban, but you know, or something like that. But
that would be funky.
Word I'd use for that.
I guess quite poignantly, I guess you get Gavi Speed. It's not too long since, It's recently the anniversary of his passing, and yeah, I guess that's one to sort of recognise. He was a fabulous player, but. I think one thing that frustrates me with Leighton Baines is he's never in that conversation for best Premier League left backs. Now, no, I'm not saying he's better than Ashley Cole. Ashley Cole's probably your best you're really ever going to get for that regard. But he's never anywhere near that conversation because he played for Everton, really. You know what I mean? His capability, just, you know, with obviously putting the ball in. And, a lot of goals and assists, etc. It was brilliant. But he was part of that defence with, like, the record clean sheets, wasn't he? There was, like, 15 clean sheets or something like that in the season. I forget how many exactly. But he was part of a really, really, really good defence as well, you know what I mean, which kept a lot of clean sheets. So people always have this lazy, like, assumption, was he great defensively? He was. He was very good defensively, Baines. So that's one of the gripes I have with that. So and a good lad as well, Leighton as well. It's obviously good to have a local player there. So for a lot of reasons, Leighton Baines would be my favourite, I think.
Baines is up there for me as well, but of course, just got to check with Adam. When he said he looked good, Adam, and he was 7 out of 10, is that for his looks or his performance?
Oh, both. I said at least 7 out of 10. I mean, yeah. Usually for me, Leighton's a strong 9, especially if he's got a guitar case. So yeah,
like for me, Baines, I think he's got a really strong case to be in Everton's all-time 11. You know, he was that good, and certainly for my generation, I think he's the one player that, I think I wrote a piece for Toffee Web London, you know, he's the one player from my generation where I can tell the grandkids about him and say he was a special, special player. It's just that ability, that as you said, Adam, just that consistency. But I agree with Paul, you know, Gary Speed, Gareth Barry, you know, just imagine them in five-a-side, the way they keep the ball, the way they use it. But I've got to say as well, a player that I didn't rate when I was younger, but now I've looked back and I can say that he's got a cultured left foot, Idan Tal.
Mm.
Technically.
That's a shout.
Not a massively effective player, not a star performer, but when it comes to just a wand of a left foot, you know, Idan Tal in the playing back boots is up there as well. And I also as well... Got to mention Nuno Valente. Just loved him. But I think there is always something, isn't there, as you said, about a wand of a left foot, cultured left foot. When a player has a left foot, they're just instantly better than like the right side or equivalent. And it is. And we can't let it go. I'm sure, actually, I won't mention it until Lyndon has. I'm sure Lyndon will have a different answer.
I do, and in the spirit of Andy's, you know, Andy's talking about his, you know, his teenage years of you know, when football was, you know, just magic. It has to be Kevin Sheedy. Having seen,
what are you going to say, Pop London How?
No. I mean that year. I mean, they were both fantastic players with great left feet. Kevin Sheedy will, I think, you know, go down as the archetypal cultured wand of a left foot. It's funny. The more the game moves on, the less you think he'd be capable of sort of fitting in the modern game, because he really was. His defensive responsibilities were largely neglected, but that's because he made up for it with just a stunning left foot. Scored some fantastic goals and just a very reliable outlet in terms of scoring goals. So yeah, would have to be Kevin Sheedy for me.
Al, did you really not pick Duncan Ferguson?
Yeah. Duncan's was all holding it up, wasn't it? And no, I will give it to Baines. Although, of course, Duncan needs a mention.
Yeah. Probably have to do a whole new show just about left footers.
Just about left footers. Yeah, it is a broad topic, but we'll leave it there. Thanks, team. We'll leave it there and reconvene early next week when we'll no doubt have plenty to discuss. Two big games for Everton coming up, which, when you consider that Luton next face Arsenal and then Man City, They present us with a good chance of being out of the bottom three by the time we travel to Burnley on the 16th. So fingers crossed. And until next time, Blues, all the very best, and up the immovable Toffees.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.